My passion is the fight for freedom. My father fought for World War II defending our country. Today, we are no longer fighting with guns. Instead, we are fighting an ideological battle for control of our country by contributing to causes that support your constitutional rights. I am Patriot Mobile.
That was a shooting gallery up there.
I could hear the tremble in his voice.
She suffered a fairly severe beating, and the video is pretty graphic.
Justice for us seems almost impossible.
It's not fun to watch somebody die, and they knew she was in mortal peril.
They have not asked the hard questions. Why was the Capitol intentionally unsecure that day?
The FBI had information about security concerns before January 6th.
They're out for blood, and they're getting it. They appear to be winning.
Were the actions of the Capitol Police out of line? Were there violations in use of force?
Now I describe it as an inside job.
I'm ready to do whatever God calls me.
There's an old Chinese saying my ancestors learned before the Communist Party took over our country. The family is the essential unit of human society, and that you must have honor and defend your family. But it's not always easy to do.
When the regime gives the order, you have to kill.
My heart was pounding. I felt my body bouncing and twisting on the floor. They put numbers on our shoulders, then separated us into rows of even and odd numbers. I was number 9. My brother, he's still in prison. And my sister, she was sent to a labor camp without a trial. But there's one piece of evidence they haven't been able to destroy yet. I left everything behind. If I can't expose what they did to us, then all of our suffering would be for nothing.
Welcome to Chosen Generation with your host, Pastor Greg Young.
But you are a chosen generation, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, a peculiar people, that you should shew forth the praises of him who has called you out of darkness into his marvelous light, which in time past were not a people, but are now the people of God, which had not obtained mercy, but now have obtained mercy.
And now, Chosen Generation, where no topic is off limits and everything is filtered through biblical glasses. And now, here's your host, Pastor Greg.
And welcome to the program. Great to have you with me. Thanks so much for being here. I know you have a choice of where you can listen each and every day. And I thank you for keeping it tuned here to Chosen Generation Radio, where no topic is off limits and everything filtered through biblical glasses. All right. Let me see here if I can figure out why or where we're leaking out. Because that would... That would,
while we're talking, I'm going on another computer too.
Okay,
so.
That would play a role as well. If I'm leaking out over here somewhere and something is picking it up. 1-2-1-2-1-2 No, I don't think so. I don't believe that's the case. But just in case, let me disconnect that. Okay. So there. So now that's undone. And let's see if that doesn't make a difference. Okay. All right. Hey, welcome aboard, folks. Good to have you with me. Thank you so much for being here today. And we've got a great hour lined up for you. We're gonna get into what's going on in Israel, and also what's happening here in our country in response to that, and the concerns. As it relates to that. So we'll get into that in our first hour. Second hour, we will be joined by Ken Thornburg, will be with us. We'll be talking about Halloween, exposing the truth behind this day that both Ken and I have personally come into contact with, and we'll talk about that. And we'll also talk about what you can do to protect yourself and your family, and some things that you should definitely be engaged in. And then finally, Matt Long and I are going to talk about what is free speech, and where is the line, and what does that line look like, and that is especially in light of things we're seeing at like. Places like Cornell, Harvard, UCLA, and so on. But we'll talk about that, too, a little bit from the historical perspective, and maybe that'll help answer some of that question when Matt and I get into that conversation. So let me begin by welcoming my friend David Wormser to the program, Center for Security Policy. David, welcome. Good to have you.
It's great to be here with you, as always. So.
Well, I wish that we were here under different circumstances as it relates to, you know, the battle that Israel is in. And it's been 24 days since the attack that took place. And and one really has to wonder what is the perspective, because we're looking at a lot of blowback against Israel in spite of what happened on the 7th. And I think that what's missed in this, David, and I know you've got a lot to share on this, but what's missed in this is the recognition too. The 7th was somewhat of a beginning, and it really was an escalated continuation of things that Israel has been dealing with at the West Bank, coming out of Gaza, addressing. I mean, this is every bit of this is stuff that you and I talked about probably for the last couple of months. In particular, we intensified our conversation and analysis, your warnings about what was potentially coming.
Yeah, we even talked about what was called the Ring of Fire, which was a combined attack war with Hamas in Gaza, the Palestinians of Judea and Samaria and West Bank under the Palestinian Authority and Hamas and Islamic Jihad. Uprising of Israeli Arabs, and then also a war in the north on the northern border with Lebanon and Golan and Syria, Israel's northern border, and then also the further circle of missiles coming in at Israel from Yemen and potentially eventually from Iran itself. Well, we've seen now the realization of about 80% of that already. the Gaza attacked. It was a horrific attack, as we all know. Lebanon and Syria are in a constant state of attack with Israel. It's lower level than what Hamas did, but it's claimed 10 Israeli soldiers and probably close to 100 Hezbollah fighters. But every day there's tank fire, there's attempted terrorist attack, infiltrations, rocket attacks, drone attack attempts, and so forth coming from Lebanon and from Syria. The Israelis are responding pretty much point by point at this point, maybe a little bit more hitting strategic, but it's basically at this point because it wants to fight sequentially on fronts. It's focusing on the south and responding to the north, but not initiating anything big. And then in the last, we had already 2 weeks ago once, and now this morning we had a serious attack by Yemenite drones and missiles onto a southern Israeli city. They were all shot down, so there's no injuries. But the missiles reached into Israel, and the Israeli air defenses engaged them and shot them down. So Yemen is also now definitely involved. In the West Bank, nobody's paying attention, but there's heavy fighting going on in many cities, Jenin, Shechem, Tul Karam, apparently emerging in Hebron. Over 1,500 Palestinians have been arrested by the Israeli forces, close to 100 killed. The Israelis have lost also, not anywhere near that, because, again, they're now going on the offense rather than defense. They've lost maybe half a dozen soldiers in the West Bank. And there's also a fear that Jordan could collapse because the Iraqi Shiite militia is aligned with Iran, are trying to move into Jordan to take up positions on Israel's border, Jordanian-Israeli border. Jordan is at peace with Israel, so those borders are relatively weak and undefended. So the Israelis now are having to significantly bolster their forces on that border. So Israel really is being besieged from every direction, and it's being essentially directed from Tehran.
And so now one of the things that we saw was, I don't know if you mentioned in this, and I apologize, I have to tell you, I am over here launching all kinds of anti-hack protection, and having done that, our audio just cleared up.
Yeah. Your program is obviously central to maintaining American sense of purpose and morale and morality. So I wouldn't doubt that you're not very well liked by various elements in China or Russia or Iran or Caracas in Venezuela or Pyongyang. So I would have no doubt that you would be on their list of things to harass and take down.
Yeah, it certainly seems that way, and there was a, well, now there was a dramatic improvement. Now it seems as though maybe we're back to getting assaulted once again. But we'll keep our defenses up and see how that what that does for us. One of the things, the Houthis is another element, right? That have become
Yemen, the Houthis, yeah. Exactly. Absolutely.
And that was so now if we bring up the map of Israel and we look at, you know, where these assaults are coming from, folks, what we have to conclude is that Israel is literally under attack at every border. There isn't anywhere, as I put this map up, there isn't anywhere that we can say there isn't something happening. I know Egypt had been attempting to fight back against allowing incursions from their border, but they're getting harassed from some of the things that I've read by Turkey.
They're always being harassed by Turkey. Erdogan really hates the president of Turkey hates Assisi, the president of Egypt, because he wanted to have an Islamist government in Egypt, One can only imagine how dangerous the situation would be if indeed the Islamists took over in Egypt. What happened was there was a coup against the previous government, Mubarak, that was Islamist in the end. It was part of the Arab Spring, which everybody had hopes for, but turned into an Islamist nightmare. Well, the military in Egypt said, no, not us. So they did another coup and threw out the Islamists. So that government is maintained the peace with Israel. There's a peace treaty between Israel and Egypt. And they are trying their best to keep that border safe. But it's a difficult thing. Arab countries tend not to have very good authority beyond the capital. It all depends on tribal politics, regional politics. Egypt really has not had good relations with its more far-flung provinces. The Sinai Peninsula, which borders Egypt, is Israel is one of them. So it doesn't really control the population in the Sinai. So this is a very difficult thing for Egypt. And there will be a lot of things that will flow over from that border against Israel, not by Egypt's design. The second thing is Jordan is a weak country as well. I think the king of Jordan has made tremendously he's made big mistakes, let's just put it that way, and it's weakened him a lot, which opens the door for further radicalization of his population and now the potential entry of hostile forces through its territory. So Jordan, again, not for any will to go to war, is facing destabilization and being dragged into this. So even the two borders which Israel has that are entirely at peace are right now very dangerous.
Now, there was some kind of an issue that took place where Israel had to drop commandos onto a ship regarding an organization called the IHH. Can you give us a little bit of background about that? Because that has bubbled, that whole narrative has bubbled up, and there are people out there that are talking about that in terms of, well, and putting Israel and IDF in a bad light.
The incident was called the Navi Marmara incident, which is the ship was called Navi Marmara. And what it was the Turkish government, which again, Erdogan is Islamist. He's an Islamist ideologue. He is also part of NATO, so he treads somewhat carefully, and he likes to portray himself somewhat as a moderate at times, but his policies are Islamist. He's helped Al-Qaeda, well, ISIS's remnants regroup in Syria. He tried, as I said, to overthrow. He's constantly trying to overthrow the Egyptian government and make it Islamist. So he's carrying Islamist agenda. And about 5-6 years ago, or maybe even more, a decade ago, the Turks organized under Erdogan, organized ships to go to Israel to run the control mechanisms that Israel had set up for stuff getting into Gaza. Gaza is not under a blockade. This is disinformation. This is what has been out there for a decade, that somehow Gaza was an open-air prison, a blockade. There was free flow of any goods you can imagine across any border that Gaza had with Israel, with Egypt, from the sea. It just had to be monitored by the Egyptians, by the Israelis, so that no weapons were flowing in. If it wasn't a weapon, it got in, even if it was stuff that could be used to make weapons. And that's how Hamas keeps having these missiles and all this capability, is because it was not a really seriously choking blockade. It was simply a control of the border. And Turkey tried through the ship to run that control and bring ships into Gaza, potentially loaded with weapons, and there were some that were, to essentially force open a corridor of military resupply to Hamas against Israel and, frankly, against Egypt, because Egypt is threatened by Hamas, too. So it was a very hostile act of war, and the Israelis intercepted the ship at sea with commandos. And a battle ensued on the ship, and it was a great to-do. The Obama administration, unfortunately, was in power in the United States and didn't side with Israel. So the Israelis felt isolated and alone, eventually released the ship and released all the people who were on the ship. They even released the cargo of the ship as long as it wasn't military. But that is a symbolic battle in the war between Israel and the broader Islamist camp that Erdogan himself is part of.
Now, one of the things that Erdogan claims is that the U.S. was funding ISIS in the battle against Assad.
No, what the U.S. was doing was to some extent helping Syrian opposition. Now, one of two, three, four of them might have split off and become part of ISIS. And therefore, just like with the Al-Qaeda in Pakistan, we sort of presided over an inattentive situation which morphed, transformed eventually into something more dangerous. But by and large, the opposition in Syria is not ISIS. In fact, ISIS was tolerated considerably by the regime in Syria because they also attacked the opposition and the various tribes that were aligned with the opposition. Then when the Turks went into northern Syria and took a lot of territory, ostensibly to attack the Kurds, which is a minority in that area that the
right.
Turks hate.
Right.
They opened up all the prisons. The Kurds were a militia that we were aligned with, and they had had thousands of ISIS terrorists in their prison. And the Turks released them and have basically reorganized them, sent them down to Libya, and that escalated the situation in Libya. They're sending them to all over the place. So it's really Turkey. And again, this is the same thing with Hamas and Gaza. When they accuse America or Israel of something, more often than not, it's projection of what they're doing. It reminds me of in World War II, the Allies came up with a very interesting way to calculate how many German planes had been shot down, because they used the German figures of how many British planes were shot down. And they found out that it was actually highly accurate.
Wow.
Yeah.
Interesting. Well, yeah. And so these kinds of pieces of propaganda are in part what's being used to try to discredit Israel and create this backlash, if you will.
Absolutely. Every single institution in Gaza, and that includes the international organizations, are run by Hamas. Hamas butchered babies. It cut the head off babies. So This is an organization where lying isn't even on the high top 10 list of their sins. So they're dishonest. They're dishonest to the core. Everything for the service of the cause. So they're lying, and we catch them over and over and over again about their lies. But unfortunately, they control all the institutions that are in Gaza. So any information coming out of Gaza right now is calibrated to be Hamas propaganda. A lot of it is lying. Some of it is distortion. Some of it is stuff Hamas did to itself. In one part, unintentionally, that about 40% of the missiles that Hamas fires don't make it out of Gaza and land back on their own population. So there's lots of dead people from their own missiles that they can parade in front of cameras. And the second thing is we've caught Hamas killing its own people to try to make it look like an Israeli massacre. On the first week of the war, Israel said it needs to go into certain areas, and it asked Palestinians in Gaza to leave those areas, the civilians, to leave those areas so that they can operate without threatening them. And they established humanitarian corridors of movement. So the Palestinians had very clear guidelines on which paths, which roads they could move on that are free and immune from Israeli strikes. And many Palestinians started moving on those roads. Well, now the Hamas wants to use Palestinians as human shields and didn't like it. So what was their answer? They put a car bomb on these roads and killed their own people and said it was an Israeli missile that did it, so that people are too afraid to move on these humanitarian corridors. So Hamas kills its own people. It does it intentionally as well as unintentionally, massive use of human shields. It lies. It controls all institutions and structures of information coming out of Gaza. So what the world is getting is a picture of a grave humanitarian crisis, with Israelis carpet bombing and indiscriminately killing civilians, when in point of fact, the Israelis are still extremely focused in their attacks. They are still giving early warning before they hit large buildings, any buildings. Right. In fact, they give warning, 15 minutes warning, which, of course, surrenders operational surprise and Hamas terrorists flee, leaving the civilians behind. But that's the Israeli army. They
well, and threatening, threatening the civilians as well, that if they leave, they'll shoot them as they go out their windows or out their doors. Let me play this. This was sent by a friend of mine who wrote, Palestinians reveal the truth of Israel's helping them in so many ways. Let me just, this is a speech that was done on the in the European Parliament. So let me just play it and then we'll comment on it. I want to see what they have to say.
The European Parliament love the Palestinians. They care for them. They dream about us in their sleep. How beautiful. They care about how we are oppressed by the evil Zionist Israelis, while in fact, those evil Zionist Israelis are the ones giving us jobs. You need to know that I am a textbook Palestinian Jordanian. I have relatives who are in jail for terrorist charges. I have relatives in the Palestinian Authority. I have relatives who are in Hamas. I have relatives who are in the Palestinian intelligence, in the very senior Iraqi job. And the family, yes, their family has had martyrs who died killing Israelis, and we have also martyrs who were killed by Hamas. You can't grant us justice by denying justice to our Jewish neighbors. They are our neighbors. 500,000 Palestinians every single day cross the borders to work in Israeli settlements, in Israeli homes, in Israeli hospitals. They work there, achieving European standard payments versus the non-payments of the Palestinian Authority. While you guys are obviously caring for us in good intentions, but your judgment is very cloudy. Unfortunately, most of you are seeking to destroy the very and only source of income and stability that we have, which is the Israeli Jewish state. We disagree with Israel. People in the European Parliament love.
So there you go. That man's pedigree speaks for itself.
Yeah, he's Palestinian. There are other Palestinians saying the same thing. You know, there were 20 to 50,000 Palestinians from Gaza that crossed into Israel every day to go to work. They had jobs, as he said, European-level salaries, because Israel is a fairly wealthy country. And Gaza is a poor place. It's poor not because of Israel. They're willing to employ tens of thousands of Gazans at Western wages. The poverty is the immense corruption of Hamas, and it's both to enrich Hamas leaders, but it's also to buy this war machine, this terrorist machine that they've built. So every penny that goes into Gaza is pilfered by the government and turned around to make this terrorist attack possible. And Palestinians themselves are suffering. There is no humanitarian crisis that isn't in its origin Hamas. It is at the source of any humanitarian issue. The humanitarian crisis is nowhere near what they're portraying. We talked about the targeting, but also the Israelis are letting in water. The Israelis, by the way, Israelis provided free electricity and free water to Gaza for the last decade. That they continue to provide about 50% of both to Gaza, the entire needs of Gaza. Gaza never paid, but the Israelis never cut it off. So Gaza lives electricity free and water free from Israel. And the Israelis are still doing it. They're still providing water. They did cut electricity because of the war, but not water. There's humanitarian convoys going in all the time. There's food that was always allowed to go through the borders. There is no humanitarian crisis created by a siege. There's a humanitarian crisis created by Hamas using Palestinians as human shields. And that's the real story here.
Well, and it's this, and it's unfortunately not the story that's being shared. We talked a little bit earlier about the kind of the parallels between the propaganda that's being pushed regarding Israel and what's happening over there versus some of the propaganda that we watched and really was honed, and now we should understand it, for Vietnam. However, unfortunately, there are still those that believe the student dissident rhetoric that was propagandized during the 60s, and really they're falling prey to the very same tactics.
We're seeing a red, green, black axis. The red is communism. And it all started with KGB activities in the 60s to try to penetrate peace organizations, student organizations, nuclear freeze organizations, etc. There was a strong KGB influence, and we see it now with some of their children of these efforts, the offspring of this effort, whether it's Congresswoman Bass, who was in Cuba for many years, or AOC, Ocasio-Cortez, who believes in socialist transformation of America, or Ilhan Omar, but they align now with the Green, which is Islamist, and you see that with Rashida Tlaib and Ilhan Omar and the great alliance between Hamas and the Red, the communists, and then Black. What you're seeing is the increasing attempt to ensnare genuine fascists, anti-Semitic fascists across Europe and even in this country, to try to bring them in, use the Israel issue, use the Jewish issue to try to ensnare them into this red-green alliance, to make a red-green-black alliance. So what we're seeing is sort of a deliberate coalescing of forces that do not believe in the American idea, whether it's from the Nazi angle or from the communist angle or from the Islamist angle. We're seeing a deliberate coalescing of a coalition to assault America from within. And they're taking their directives and they're taking their spirit, their energy, and their exhilaration from what is going on abroad, especially the blood from abroad, whether it's in the 60s, we saw that with the terrorism of leftist terrorists in Europe. It really, you started seeing youth here in America say Che Guevara and Carlos the Jackal and Yasser Arafat with his Ray-Ban spectacle. It became chic for the left here. Because sadly, violence has some attractive quality. The destructiveness has an attractive quality. Well, they're tapping into that now on a much higher level in this red, green, black alliance. And our left, our right, the far right, our left, and our Islamists are falling into this, and they're galvanizing a lot of people who just don't know better in the universities. It's a very dangerous threat from within.
So now looking at this, over the weekend there were protests, for those that haven't been following or are not aware, there were planes that arrived from Tel Aviv. I don't know how many people from Israel were on those planes or not, but planes arriving in Russia and literally security being overrun and attempts by mobs there to lynch. I saw one where one man's identification was taken from him. His phone was taken away. He told them what his background was, but they went into hotels. They forced students here in the United States to hide in a library because the university said we can't protect you, so we can't let you out of the library. The level of violence that is being purported and directed at Jews right now is really on a level that we saw kind of isolated in Germany. Well, Germany and Russia, I mean, a lot of people don't realize that it really began in Russia. I have had a teacher, an instructor, when I was in the Defense Language Institute, who was a defector, who had been a soccer star as a youth, and worked his way up onto the national team. And when the Soviet Union discovered that he was Jewish or of Jewish descent, that his family was Jewish, immediately he was thrown off the national team, and he and his family lost everything. And that was part of what made him decide that he had to flee.
Yeah, you know, in Russia, you had under the very last days of the Tsar, they put out that forgery, the Protocols of the Elders of Zion, which talked about some great Jewish conspiracy that is secret and so forth. This became bread and butter for anti-Semites that go of the left. Then afterwards, the not only did the predecessor of the KGB, the NKVD, adopt this and really peddle this hard, but so did the Nazis, who started as National Socialists, one should remember. So it really informed this world of this radical cesspool in Europe, and it became bread and butter of anti-Semitism. And then it managed to turn into very deadly anti-Semitic policies by the Stalinist regime in the 40s and the Doctor's Plot and so forth. So there's deep anti-Semitism, deep anti-Semitism in the communist system of Russia. The idea that they're secular and therefore they don't care about Jews is wrong. That's the one thing they do care about is hating Jews. So, again, anti-Semitism is there. But this thing about the universities, it isn't just the students are being physically threatened. It's that the university administrators, through their DEI, diversity, equity, inclusion, whatever programs, they are supporting the threat to Jewish students. Columbia University professors put out a note basically justifying the massacre of October 7th, where kids were beheaded, babies were beheaded, saying it's understandable given the context. So if you're a Jewish student and you have to go to class and your professor signed that letter, you feel like a Jew in Germany in the 30s, which is you're not going to get a good grade. This teacher hates you with daggers, and he doesn't care even to hide it. So Jews in elite institutions, ironically, it's the elite institutions. It's not the state college in Iowa, which, you know, people are still common sense, reasonable, and actually getting an education. It's Harvard. It's Princeton. It's Yale, it's Columbia, it's the top, supposedly, the top institutions have become these mechanisms of indoctrination into radicalism, not only against Jews, by the way, against anybody that stands in their way, Christians. You know, if a year ago you would have had the same sort of letters and so forth about some believing Christian who was in the class or stuff like that. So it is really institutionalized anti-Semitism, institutionalized politics of hatred and dehumanization of any political force they disagree with, of which the Jews, of course, are a big one that they disagree with. But so too is everybody else. It is this idea that if you aren't in the radical camp, you are now not a human with human rights. And that is affecting university administrations and university professors. Students you can deal with. You can expel. Other students can beat them up, whatever. Students can work it out. It's the administration, the symbols of power in these universities that have become instruments of attack against the American idea, and with it, the Jews. Wherever the Jews are attacked, usually you see the American idea is what's really behind it. The attack on the American idea is what's really behind it.
Right. Well, the attack on the American, you know, idea, really, I mean, at the end of the day, this is a religious war of sorts.
Yeah.
Because this is their belief that they are required to wipe out the infidels. I mean, that's what their ultimate goal is to wipe out the infidels.
And for the Islamists, it's the infidels, and for the communists, it's their form of infidels. The non-communist people. So
yep, absolutely.
You know, America has been so wonderful to its Jews before America even was. I mean, there's a wonderful relations between Jews and American colonialists before 1776. George Washington also was deeply involved with the Jewish community and thanked them greatly. And throughout, whether it's Abraham Lincoln, so forth, throughout the entirety of American history, you saw tremendous Judeophilic, as opposed to likes, very friendly attitudes toward Jews. And Jews have lived here as a, and because of that, they really have most Jews. I mean, there's this radical subculture on the left, but most Jews really have benefited and enjoyed greatly this American idea, and therefore are some of its most determined defendants, whether it's Mark Levin or so forth. And now what you're seeing is the assault on the American idea inherently therefore involves an assault on the Jewish position in America. And this is dangerous because I'm hearing a lot of Jews in Europe and America saying, we give up. If we can't send our kids to a good university and not have them harassed, I'll send them to Israel. So the Europe is in danger of losing its Jews. America, the top institutions, are in danger of losing Jewish students. And this is a tragedy. The Jews are deeply involved with every productive sector of American society.
Well, David, I think that, you know, the other piece to this is that we know is there is an absolute domino impact as it relates to Christian persecution as well.
Exactly, it's the same thing.
Exactly. I mean, I see the remember my son saw a spot that played last night during the World Series about, you know, comparing the hate against Israel to then, you know, blacks and LGBTQ and what have you. And I suppose you can make that argument, but I think the real issue here, honestly, the real issue here is breaking down the conscience and God. And I saw a good sermon over the weekend, Pastor Jeffers preached in his church up in Dallas about the importance of the Sixth Commandment and valuing life and how important life is. And so, you know, yes, we do. I guess my biggest qualm is, and I know that my conservative black friends agree, the correlation between the black civil rights movement and the LGBTQ and why those are not parallels. Because one is a immoral sexual decision and, you know, being Italian or black or Jewish or what have you is what you're born in and you cannot change that. Now, practicing Judaism is something that a Jewish person chooses to do because not all Jews practice their religion. And practicing Christianity is something that one chooses to do. But in this country, knowing how we were founded, that right is the very first of the First Amendment. Is our right to defend and our God-given mandate to protect that right?
Absolutely, it's the foundation. It's the freedom of religion, not from religion. Freedom of religion. Our government is not supposed to make one religion, the state religion, and oppress the others. But it is supposed to provide the freedom for religion to flourish. These were people who created America, were people who did believe in God. They were not rabid atheists who wanted to destroy religion and remove it from public life. The opposite. They wanted to give religion room in public life in a way that it could be safely pursued by those who believe in certain things, and that they don't have to look over their shoulder and be executed if they say the wrong things. They gave religion freedom. And what happened was, what you're seeing is this radical attempt, again, Islamists because they don't believe in anything but Islam, the communists because they're rabidly atheist. And for them, that has to become the state religion. So for them, it's freedom from religion. Government's purpose is to destroy religion and remove it from public life, from life. And that because religion stands in their way of their utopian transformation of man. So there's no doubt that in the end, this is the foundation of America's the First Amendment, and specifically the right to practice your religion as you see fit. And this is the front of the attack against the idea of America.
How the attacks right now, by the way, are this is the worst war that Israel has been in, probably even greater than the war of 1967. Honestly, if you really truly evaluate the situation that's going on, so I guess the question then that begs asking is you know, and Netanyahu has said over the weekend, we're not going to stop our advance in Gaza, which. Give me the how you would share with the people the justification to fight back against this argument that for some reason there should be a sit down at a table somewhere and a conference for peace.
You can't negotiate a compromise between a murderer and his victim. Can the murderer only fatally wound him but not kill the victim? I mean, this is a negotiation between a murderer and his victim. Hamas has made it clear. It's in its charter. It has always said this is its goal. And it's now executed a plan that actualized it. Jews must die. It is a genocidal institution. So are those organizations in the West chanting, Palestine will be free from the river to the sea. The river is the Jordan River. What exactly do they mean? What are you going to do to the 7 million Jews there? Well, if it's going to be Palestinian, we just saw what happens to the Jews. Mm-hmm. So it's a call for genocide. So there is no compromise. There is no sitting down. And this is something America realized in World War II. We didn't have humanitarian pauses or negotiated settlements with either Imperial Japan or Nazi Germany, because we understood it wasn't a question of fighting yourself to a degree of safety or parity or reestablishing deterrence or anything like that. It was that the very idea of Nazism cannot coexist with the free world. Right. The very idea of Imperial Japan cannot coexist with America. It is either us or them. And that is where the Israelis are. It is either us or them. It is either the Jews survive as a people and Hamas is destroyed, and with it, Hezbollah and the whole idea behind it of destruction of Israel and the extermination of the Jewish people, or Israel is destroyed. One or the other. It's us or them. So there is no compromise. There is no negotiation ultimately possible here. And any humanitarian pause is simply an operational help. It's an operational assist for Hamas to regroup and go for the next round.
Which they've already, I mean, and I think, you know, going back to what I said 40 minutes ago, this is the issue that I think needs to be understood, too, that although October 7th was the worst, those kinds of acts, cuts by a thousand or death by a thousand cuts, those kinds of acts have been happening, sponsored by Hamas, acted out by Hamas for the last 10, 15 years at least.
Yeah, and I would add that the Palestinian Authority, the PLO under Abu Mazen, which the West regards as a moderate, has praised Hanan Ashrawi, their chief propagandist, is out there denying that anything happened that was bad.
Yeah.
And it is all Israel inventing this stuff with its own cameras, blah, blah, blah. There is, and by the way, we saw in the 70s with terrorist attacks, we had an Israeli school attacked, Ma'alot, 20-some Israeli kids were killed. This is not the first time you've seen slaughter of children, intentional slaughter of children. Right. We've not the first time you've seen torture used prior to slaughter on these children or elderly or men too. It is a cruel way of war that seems to mark the Palestinian resistance. And it simply, you can't get around the fact that all these organizations are evil, whether it's Palestinian Islamic Jihad, Hamas, and frankly, the PLO. And they also are killing droves of Palestinians. Palestinian Christians, first of all, are almost non-existent anymore in the territories under Palestinian control. They've conducted not a massacre, but an assault. And that assault has driven them out. So Bethlehem is almost no Christians left in Bethlehem. Bethlehem under Israeli control was 80% Christian. Ramallah was largely Christian. Now it's the height of the PLO and the Muslim. Gaza, the last few Christians there are under siege, begging Israel to help them too, and they're fleeing. So there won't be very many Christians left in Gaza. And then we know beyond Israel, not connected to the Arab-Israeli conflict, we saw what happened in Syria and Iraq, elsewhere, what happens to Christians in Iran across the Middle East. This is a holy war that is conducted through the most cruel measures possible by Hamas and ISIS and Al-Qaeda and governments, like whether it's Saddam Hussein or whether it's Abu Mazen or Yasser Arafat. They are out for Christians. They are out for Jews. Jews they can reach easier. They have the West snookered on the idea that Jews are the aggressors, so they focus on that.
Right.
But make no mistake, this is a crusade, a war, a religious war against the West as a whole and its idea, which is Christianity and Judaism and freedom. And there is no compromise with that.
So under that understanding, I guess, what response, what are we hoping, you know, can happen? Because based on some of the things that you and I talked about over the weekend or messaged about over the weekend, the level of the assault that is planned by the analysis of several is on a level that is hardly sustainable for Israel.
It's large. I mean, they're going to rise to the occasion. It's going to take a lot of Israeli soldiers, et cetera, et cetera. So this is going to be a tough war. But I think they'll actually manage it, and it's good, because on a regional level, this boils down to Iran. And yeah, they're the real water carrier for this axis of evil in the region. And I think the Israelis will wind up this war strategically bearing down on the Iranians. And again, you have to differentiate between the Iranian people, which are in full revolt against their regime,
right,
and the Iranian regime. In fact, there's graffitis that appeared in the last few days all over Iran. It's amazing, all over Iran, which I'll say the graffiti and then I'll explain it. It's the IDF will avenge your eyes. The IDF is the Israeli army. Mm-hmm. Your eyes. The reason why they say the eyes is that the regime in Iran, to suppress protesters, they use bird pellet to shoot at people's faces to knock out their eyes.
Oh, my God.
So the symbol now of the resistance isn't the hijab being removed by Masih, by the poor Kurdish woman that was killed that started it all. It is now the patch on the eye or blind, because the Iranian government is deliberately going for the eyes. And so that is what it means, that the IDF, Israel, will avenge your eyes.
Okay.
So now you know what it means. It means that the Iranian people are pouring their hopes on an Israeli victory to defeat their own regime. And that tells you strategically where this can head eventually if Israel emerges strong.
Right.
You can see an entirely transformed region where Israel, the United Arab Emirates, a post-Ayatollah Iran, are anchors for the West.
Sure.
And America can then turn its attentions to the larger global assault on America and the idea of the West, which is coming from Moscow and Beijing and is exercising itself through Pyongyang and Caracas and Venezuela and Bogota and now, unfortunately, Brasilia and Santiago. We're losing ground. We're in a strategic retreat globally.
Right.
America has to wake up, address that strategic retreat, reverse it. But the Middle East, it should let this play itself out, but not restrain Israel. It should see what Israel's doing as an opportunity to clean up.
Well, and I know from groups that I'm involved in that there's also great revival that is happening in Iran. There are hundreds of thousands of Iranians that are turning to faith in Christ. And
it's a hidden story.
Yeah,
it's true. I'm hearing the same.
Yeah, that kind of great awakening is what birthed America and brought it out from underneath the tyranny of King George. So we know what that's capable of accomplishing. And I think it's why we need to stand, continue to stand with Israel.
You know, one of the big myths of the left is religion has killed so many people. The truth is religion has fought tyranny.
Yep.
It brought down the Soviet Union. It liberated Israel and created the country. Faith is a foundation for freedom.
Yep.
And most people in this century have been killed by atheists fighting people of faith. So true with Iran, too. Well, maybe their faith is driving them. The truth is the Iranian people have no faith in the Islamic faith anymore. And they see the West and the idea of the West and increasingly Christianity is an answer to that.
Well, and unfortunately, Islam is a false religion. It's a myth, created by a delusional pedophile lunatic who was angry at the rest of the world and created something that would put him on a pedestal. And that's precisely what it did.
I think there should be a lot of study done as what the origins of Islam are. I think the more you peel away the
onion,
the skin, the more you begin to see things that are quite illuminating.
Yeah. Well, and my friend Al Rasuli has written extensively about this and studied those writings for almost 40 years and has some tremendous insight about those things at his website, Al Rasuli, Al Rasuli, and you can look at it. It's their own writings that he uses to address these horrific issues. David, thank you for being with us today. I know we probably went in a direction that was a little bit different today, but it's so important because each of these things are the things, folks, that you're watching and hearing and seeing on the university campuses, in the social media realms, even by some people who I, respect and so on, who are just really, really missing understanding and grasping what it is that is being used against them, because it's been being used for so many years. And again, I'm just going to put this out there. If you have not seen or watched disinformation, Pacheco's story about how disinformation was used, even in Vietnam, he specifies it, how they used it in the Vietnam War on the campuses of the colleges to turn America against the war so they could advance their communist goals in Southeast Asia. That was one of their primary weapons of war, was propaganda on college campuses. And my goodness, it's repeating itself. 60 years later, we are doing the exact same thing and we're falling for it again as a nation. And we've got to wake up. Dr. David, thank you for being here. I greatly appreciate it.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
We're going to take a break. Ken Thornburg joins me. We're going to talk about what today is, October 31st. It is Halloween. We'll talk about what that really is and the dangers of it. And we'll be back to talk to you about that and how you can protect yourself and your family right after this brief break.